It's the diagnosis that no one wants to receive, but one an estimated 1.3 million people must face every year. Breast cancer is the most prevalent cancer in the world, striking women and men of every age and race. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and each year, Arizona Spotlight brings you Voices for the Cure, an opportunity for some of the countless people whose lives and loved ones have been touched by breast cancer to share stories of courage, love, and hope. It's easy to tell that Rowan Frost and her son, Tori Middlebrooks, share a strong friendship. It's a relationship that was built during years of closeness in a single-parent family. Even the closest family bonds can be tested by the emotional strain of breast cancer. And Rowan's diagnosis and treatment over a decade ago remains a time that they don't talk often about. But next, we'll hear them share memories of how laughter can overcome fear and how hard it can be to tell someone you love how much you need them.
Tell me about my grandma. We've never, in all the shared history of cancer that we have had, I knew that she had it, but I know nothing else other than it was very different than your experience.
Yeah, so it was interesting because I was probably about, and I don't remember, my mom's passed away, of course, a long time ago, but I was probably about 8 or 9 when my mom was first diagnosed with cancer. And she was, her experience was completely different from mine as well. She and my father were still together at the time, and she went in for a biopsy. They found a lump in her breast, and she had me when she was older, so she would have been about 45 the first time she was diagnosed. And she went in for a biopsy and woke up, and they had completed a radical mastectomy, which meant that they cut away all of the breast tissue down to the muscle. They took all of the lymph nodes out from both the arms, cut a lot of muscles in there, and sent her home. And there was follow-up. I believe she did chemo and radiation. I'm not sure about that. I was way too young to have any kind of comprehension of what was going on. But I really believe that, and my mother certainly believed, that it put a huge rift in her marriage with my father. And they separated soon after that. So it was a very chaotic time for me. And then when my mother was re-diagnosed with cancer, you were just an infant. You were like barely born. So that would have been about 1984. And I spent the next 3 years, your first 3 years of life, pretty much kind of nursing her through that. You spent a lot of time with your grandma while I was taking care of my mom. Mm-hmm. And I remember most about, for my mom, it was the fear, I think, that was the worst thing for her. She was just so afraid of dying. So having that experience of watching her go through that and being a young adult, I was about 25 when she passed away, I think really prepared me for when I experienced having cancer. I was diagnosed the first time in 1998. I was 36 years old. It was the first time I'd had health insurance, and I knew that my family had a history of breast cancer, so I wanted to get a baseline mammogram. And I did, and they were like, you have stage 2 cancer, which was kind of a shock. And so was immediately thrown into this without any preparation. I mean, 36 is pretty young to be diagnosed. And you were only about 13, which meant that I was absolutely terrified for you because I, you know, I felt like I didn't want to die because you were so young, and I wanted to be there for you and wanted to be there for you growing up. And I thought about the options for you if I were to die, and I wasn't real crazy about any of them. So that was, it was, it's, there's so much emotion involved with cancer because you have to deal with so many different kinds of fears and processes and procedures and systems that you haven't even ever thought about. And all of a sudden, everything is very immediate, and you're being asked to make decisions based on very little information that will literally affect whether you live or die.
You did a really good job of keeping me, I wouldn't say uninformed. You told me about all the processes, and you said, oh, I've started chemo, but at the age of 13, I couldn't conceptualize that. I'm more interested in comic books and not getting beaten up at school. And so to have a mother who is on the brink of death.
Yeah.
And doesn't tell you about it. That's a really interesting experience. And so why did you choose to go with the normalcy as opposed to like bracing me for consequences?
Because the cancer wasn't that serious. I mean, there's always the chance that it will be worse than they think it is. But what I was being told was that my 5-year survival rate was very good. I didn't want to... When you're 13, you're not equipped emotionally to conceptualize what death, the death of a parent means. I don't know that you ever are.
I'm 28, and the idea of a 5-year survival rate is terrifying to me. Like,
yeah.
To take a pause and think, will you be alive in 5 years, is not a thought that people ever, like, voluntarily... Just, you know, oh, what will I be doing in 5 years? I'm going to be having a family. I'll be working. I'll be doing these things. Not will I be alive or dead?
Yeah. It definitely helps you get your priorities straight. That's for sure. And I think that was what, you know, and having you there actually was incredible on a couple of different levels. One, it was terrifying because I wasn't just fighting for my own survival at that point. I had to think about how the decisions I was making were going to impact you. And you were
my sole support. We had nobody else. I mean, I have family in California, but I have no idea how they were affected or how they understood. I don't know what you even told them about it. Like,
yeah.
I still haven't had conversations with them about it. And I'm,
really?
You know, 15 years later, and occasionally grandma just asks, how are you? Which has got these connotations of, has the cancer re-arrived?
Oh, great.
Right? Like that's...
Is she dead yet?
Right? Exactly. Right. Like, and that was as much connection as they had with it is through me.
I do remember they told my brother, because I didn't have a way to get in touch with my brother, and Jeff called and was sobbing on the phone. And I remember what he said was, you're going to die just like mom did, and which is not helpful, really not helpful. And so I spent, I ended up spending almost an hour on the phone calming him down, right? Like, I'm like, I'm sorry, I have cancer. I really need to deal with this. So, you can deal with your own emotions, dude.
That kind of became like a reoccurring theme for you. It was like, you told somebody you had cancer and then you had to deal with their reaction. Like, you never got a chance.
That's so true. There's a movie called 50-50 that has Joseph Gordon-Levitt in it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've seen it or not. But
it's on my list.
Yeah, it's awesome because what he talks about in there, it's like, you know, how do you, when you're conversing with people and they find out you have cancer, like they have no idea how to react. And so you end up doing a lot of emotional support for the people in your life. And that's one thing that they don't tell you about cancer. It's like, you know, in fact, that might be something really useful is like, you know, how to emotionally support the people in your life who are impacted by your cancer.
Right, right. Yeah. Like counseling lessons on, so you have cancer and you have to tell somebody, like.
Right. Yeah. Doing crisis management with them. Yeah. I think for me, you know, you've said that I did a really good job of kind of shielding you from all of that. And it really was my goal because it's not about the illness and the death. And I think that that's what cancer really brings home for you, is that it's not about the illness and the death. It's about the way you live your life.
Right. It's what comes after.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's, you know, so what is going to happen to you is going to happen to you. And it's what you do with it that determines what kind of a person you are and what kind of and how your relationships with other people are going to be. And I'm just really, really glad that I have you as a kid, because you don't realize this, but you have always been so funny. You know, you're just a really funny person and you say really silly things and you would make me laugh. And I would sometimes not talk to you after I'd had surgery because you'd make me laugh so much. But that was incredibly helpful, you know, to be able to put my energy into just having a relationship with you and letting you be who you are, who is a wonderful young man. I absolutely adore you.
Thank you very much. I love you very much, too.
Yeah. So glad we had a chance to talk about this stuff.
We haven't really ever done it.
No.
It's not really coffee talk time.
No, it will be sometime.
Yeah.
That was Rowan Frost talking with her son, Tori Middlebrooks. You can listen to more stories on the Voices for the Cure page at azpm.org. Voices for the Cure is produced in association with Susan G. Komen for the Cure, Southern Arizona. More information is online at komensaz.org.